CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, Gatestone, Newsweek, and The Hill. Korea, the Korean Peninsula. We welcome Greg Scarlatu, director of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea. Gordon, there are two significant dates coming for the people of the Korean Peninsula. What are they, and why is it now that we worry about these dates, all these decades later, Gordon?
Hi, John. First of all, there's the 60th anniversary of the Treaty of Mutual Friendship and Defense. That's between China and North Korea. That just passed. And Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un, the leaders of both of those regimes, just marked it with messages of friendship. Also coming up, July 27th, is the 68th anniversary of the armistice in the Korean War. The Korean War still continues to today on many different levels. The fighting stopped with the armistice, but the combatants seem to be still going at it in different ways.
Greg, a very good evening to you. What use the Mutual Defense Pact? I mean, for heaven's sakes, do they think they're going to be attacked? It's an antique.
Not according to the regime of Kim Jong-un. Article 2 of the treaty, the July 11th, 1961 treaty, stipulates that either party should come to the aid of the other party in the event that they're attacked. One has to remember that the Korean People's Army, the North Korean military, has 1.2 million men and women in uniform. 80% of these troops are deployed south of the Pyongyang Wonsan line, poised to invade, poised to attack South Korea. There isn't much left close to the border with China, so pursuant to this treaty and pursuant to a traditional alliance that the DPRK and the PRC have had, the regime of Kim Jong-un is not really worried about China. They do count on China as a protector. And of course, indeed, China has been annoyed with multiple generations at Kim's at times, but China has not changed its fundamental strategic stance on North Korea. It regards North Korea as a satellite state, an allied state, a cumbersome one, but an allied state, a bargaining leverage, and a buffer between capitalist, democratic, prosperous South Korea, a staunch friend, ally, and partner of the United States and China. Last but not least, they continue to prop up this regime of Kim Jong-un because this regime is a thorn in the side of the United States through its nuclear tests, its nuclear program, its missile launches, and its human rights violations.
Gordon, you have a question for Greg.
Greg, in 1950, Kim Il-sung, the first North Korean leader, attacked the South. We just passed, actually, the anniversary of that attack. China came to North Korea's aid when the United States, and under the United Nations flag, was able to repel and, indeed, go into North Korean territory. Question is, if Kim Jong-un, the current North Korean ruler, attacks the South, would China be a combatant? Because it wouldn't technically be covered by the treaty because North Korea is the attacker, but there is a history there. So what do you think would happen?
Technically, pursuant exclusively to the treaty, China would be, as you said, under absolutely no obligation to come to North Korea's aid if the invasion were to be initiated by the North Koreans. But here's the problem, Gordon. Textbooks teach North Korean children that it was not North Korea, but South Korea that invaded the North on June the 25th, 1950. Chinese textbooks, I am sure, also teach children that the PRC and the so-called volunteers helped repel the invasion by the U.S., the U.N., and the other imperialists. So the claim will, of course, the claim has never been on that side that North Korea invaded the South, and really, God forbid, should such a course of events happen again, I am 100% sure that the North Korean regime would find a pretext, an explanation supporting their claim that it was actually not the North but the South. or the United States, or both, that invaded.
Greg, the armistice, is it taught in the schools? Is it in the mind of the people of South Korea?
Once you are inside South Korea, I have to say that the perception is different. Even my perception changes, and I'm a Korea watcher. I've been following and studying Korean Peninsula issues for 31 years now. Once I land at Incheon Airport, you enter a different dimension. You enter a state of normality. South Koreans have learned how to live with this ever present threat of the sheer mass and proximity of the North Korean military. Now, of course, brazen military provocations have been launched by the North. Of course, South Koreans are worried every time they test a nuclear weapon or they launch a missile. South Korean sailors have been killed over the past a little over two decades in incidents along the NLL, the Northern Limit Line, incidents provoked by the North Koreans. Going back, one can also remember 1967, the year when North Koreans sent a commando to assassinate then-President Park Chung-hee. My father-in-law is here in the USA with us right now. He was an ROTC at the time. His unit was actually in Seoul and deployed at the time, and he told me that reminded me that both his platoon commander and his battalion commander were killed in that exchange of fire with North Korean commandos. These incidents have happened over the past few decades. So while South Koreans know how to live under this North Korean threat, nevertheless, South Koreans, many times young Koreans, young South Korean soldiers, have been killed in these provocations launched by the North.
We have a couple of minutes, Gordon.
Greg, you talk about these provocations, which are basically acts of war. North Korea, on at least three occasions, has abrogated the Korean armistice, though I'm sure they didn't mean it. Why do we adhere to an armistice that has been ended by the North Koreans?
Because of the grave threat that North Korea poses to South Korea and to Americans living in South Korea. One has to remember that let's leave nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles, and other weapons of mass destruction on the side, biological, chemical weapons. Seoul is within range from the North Korean long-range artillery deployed on the Kaesong Heights. The casualties of a Korean War, a second Korean War, would be absolutely unimaginable. And that's basically the conundrum that we continue to face on the Korean Peninsula.
What do you want our audience to remember on these dates, Greg? We have less than a minute.
We have to remember that this is just a temporary arrangement. We must get beyond just an armistice eventually. Koreans must find the road to reconciliation, peace, and unification. That can happen only under a free, democratic, prosperous market economy, capitalist Republic of Korea, not on the Kim family regime terms.
Greg Scarlatu, Director of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, Gatestone, Newsweek, and The Hill. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.